Hey, welcome, everybody. Welcome. And those at home, welcome. It was very joyful to see you come in. So maybe those of us in the room can give a wave to those at home. Hello. Wave back. All right. So even though we're in different places, still one Sangha. So there's somebody from my Vashon Sangha sent me a little poem, and I wrote down the name, and then I couldn't find where I wrote it down. So I will have to get back to you all on this, but it's called Piety. And it goes, "We are all out to see. We are all out to sea, some looking for a lighthouse, others a current." So this month we're exploring this quality of virya. So this is a quality of energy and effort. And Ajahn Suchito talks about this as stewarding our resources, which is such a beautiful way, I think, of thinking about it. Because, like attention, our energy is a very valuable resource. It's finite. We didn't create it. We can't determine when it goes. We're not in control of it, but we do have some influence over it. We can care for it. So stewarding our resources, I think, is a wonderful way of thinking about it, of practicing with it. In order to care for it, we first have to notice it, contact it. What does it mean to be, what is your experience like of being an energetic being, a being made of energy? How do you experience that? So I think that is a really helpful starting place, and I spoke to it a little bit last week. But it also has to do with how we direct and use that energy. Right, so we can use it in ways that naturally restore, replenish, enliven, or we can use it in ways that deplete, constrict, and kind of fritter it away. Right, I think we all have probably had some experiential understanding of that. So traditionally, and I mentioned this last time, this quality of virya is translated as heroic effort, so courageous effort. And there's a real like vigor to it, as it's talked about in the classical teachings. There's a real sense of kind of wholeheartedness. And I'll talk about that a little bit tonight. But what I wanted to say first is that we can't tell the kind of effort that's needed without deeply checking in, without a lot of mindfulness to tell, like, what is the current state and condition, right? We can't just apply some standard of effort from the outside and expect it to work. It takes a lot of sensitivity to be able to know what's needed when. So this is the wisdom part, to know what's needed when. And for some of us, this emphasis on vigor and kind of coming forward in a more wholehearted way, wholehearted, energetic way, is wonderful medicine, beautiful medicine. For others, next month's practice, the focus on patience, is going to be much more a helpful medicine, right? So it's not that this isn't relevant, but you might get a sense of what's more helpful when, which is part of the practice of effort, is getting the hang of when it might be helpful to kind of arouse our energy, our intention, our trust, and when it might be helpful to step back, hang back, just let things take their natural course. So there's always a dance between those two. And we can't tell from the outside about the effort that other people are exerting, right? So sometimes we look at other people and it either looks heroic what they're doing, or maybe it doesn't look courageous at all, you know? But maybe for some people, the most courageous form of effort is just to be able to be in this room for this 2 hours. Just being in the room might be a form of courageous effort. Yeah, depending on what their energy is like in that moment, what their mind is like. For others, there might be, you know, the edge is in a very different place. So I was, this reminded me on the way here, I remembered, I was on a 2-month retreat in India a number of years ago, and it was a tradition that I didn't ordinarily practice in. So for a variety of reasons, I was out of my comfort zone, and it was a very challenging retreat. It was a lot physically, a lot mentally, and my roommate on this retreat, to me, looked like the epitome of continuous, mountain-like, unwavering effort, right? She was just a rock. And so we were in silence, but she was my roommate, and so had a sense of, you know, wow, this is so much steadiness and so impressive. And it's like, wow, we're having really different retreats. And at the end of the retreat, I was really anxious to talk to her, and I just said, wow, you're so steady, you're so still. And she said, oh, no, I'm getting married in a month. I just planned my wedding the whole time. Yeah. So we really can't tell what's going on with people, you know? So, yeah, she said it totally with not an ounce of shame. And I kind of loved that. There was just not an ounce of self-recrimination in it. So we really, really don't know, yeah? So we get into a lot of struggle when we think, I'm feeling low energy, I'm feeling unmotivated, I just need to try harder, yeah? Just need to pump up the volume, just need to try harder. So remember that wisdom precedes this parami, yeah? Has so much to do with sensitivity, being able to sense what our natural resources are, what our limitations are, what the kind of requirements and limitations of the situation are, and then dancing in between those two. Yeah, moving in between those two. So there can be a tremendous, courageous effort that can be quite gentle. Yeah, it doesn't have a lot to do with force, but can be quite powerful at the same time. But it has to do with that sensitivity. Okay, so tonight, I have to work on my preambles. I often give long preambles before I actually start. But I promised tonight I would talk about lower energy states. So I would talk about sluggishness, procrastination, and laziness. All right. So sluggishness, procrastination, and laziness. So buckle your seatbelts. There we go. Okay. So we might think of these as being the opposite of virya when we experience them. Yeah, as being a lack of energy or low energy. So think about when you're sluggish. And in the texts, there are all these images of like water that's murky or muddy. Yeah, it's like moving through kind of thick fluid. But what's really happening there when we investigate isn't so much a lack of energy often as energy that's been kind of clogged or stuck. Yeah, it's actually more like stuckness. So we can notice that. So I want to speak a little bit to each of these, and they're related. So sluggishness, procrastination, and laziness. But really, when we're talking about energy, it's we're really using it to overcome inertia. And so this is going to look different for each of us, right? But it's really about, so that the image is often one of going against the stream, crossing over a stream, which is like a tide or a current of conditioning. So we can expect that when we start to experiment in practice using our attention and our energy differently, that we will experience resistance. Like we need to expect that, and it's going to come in a lot of different forms. So sometimes, let's see if anybody's experienced this, you sit down, you've actually been like rushing a lot of the day, been going from place to place, doing a lot of things, actually fairly like active and outward, and then you come sit down and you just sink. Yeah, you just sink. Dull, we call it sinking mind. Yeah, it's like just a quick drop. Anybody experienced that? Yeah. And so in that kind of sinking sluggishness, we're not quite sure what we're aware of, right? It's heavy. And so when we go from being very stimulated, going to the next thing, getting more information, being kind of propped up with a lot of stimulus, when we sit, it's like we immediately pull the plug on a lot of that, and our energy can sink and drop. So sluggishness can have a lot of causes, but it is one hindrance, so one of five energies that move through every meditator, that if we're not careful, we can identify with and create a kind of problem or a struggle around it. So in classical terms, this is called sloth and torpor, which is perfect. It's like an onomatopoeia. It's like slurpy or like sluggish, slow moving. Yeah. So as a hindrance, and it has a mental component and a physical component, right? So we'll likely notice the physical component as heaviness, as like an extreme tiredness. And the mental quality is a dull, kind of thick, cloudy form of resistance, right? So this is a form of inertia that we can notice in sitting. We can also notice it in our daily lives, right? If we notice it, know its feel, know its texture, know what's happening, we're less likely to completely succumb to it. So the first thing that we can do is to just notice it, right? It is a state, not a character trait. So I know early in my practice, there was so much sluggishness, so much of this kind of dull, murky mind. And I kind of assumed that, oh, this is just like who I am. This is like my personality, right? But then when conditions would change, when the energy would gather a little bit more and brighten, it would start to dissipate, right? Not because I willed it, not because I drummed up a lot of willpower and marshaled my energy, but because the conditions that supported it changed. So the biggest learning in that was that this is a state. This is not who I am. This is not me. So what we can notice, and this is different than just being sleepy and tired, right? And so it can start to kind of tell the difference between being having a bit lower energy, being sleep deprived. Sloth and torpor is a form of resistance, right? It's as though, I would almost experience it as though, would experience it at times when actually my full engagement was really needed. Yeah, like perhaps in times of challenge or conflict, or when things were getting kind of heated or intense, I would notice how some people in those situations would kind of experience this like rallying virya energy, right? They would kind of come into focus. But often in certain circumstances, I would just experience this, just like a deep inertia, like a sluggishness or mental resistance, you know? So when we look a little bit closer, we can notice that it's a deep kind of protective mechanism or form of resistance that is, it's a deep not wanting. Yeah, so it's a form of aversion that we can notice. And it's not a pushing back, it's not a striking out, but it tends towards kind of collapse, withdrawal, sinking, if we identify with it. Yeah, if we kind of let it pull us in. So the interesting part of these lower energy states is that while some forms of resistance kind of spur us into like managing, controlling, fixing, doing, some of these lower energy states can almost incapacitate us. Yeah, we can feel sort of incapacitated by it. So the kind of skillful way of working with it is first by knowing what's happening, not being intimidated by it, arousing interest. Like, what is actually happening here? Yeah, what is actually happening here? What's being known? Sometimes dropping just a little question in what's being known, because it can be like being pulled under an undertow, right? So what is being known here? Immediately awareness brightens a little bit. Yeah? what is actually being known. Oh, my eyelids are a little heavy. Yeah, I notice a lot of kind of tiredness in the back of my head, low back. So we can know that, what is actually being known. My thoughts tend in the direction of doubt. I don't know if I'm going to have the energy to do that, right? I don't think I'm up for this. My mind would be repeating thoughts like, this is so hard. and immediately the heaviness would descend even further. I'm so tired. Yeah. And it would get heavier. Right? So these forms of resistance are really calling for our kind of interest and inquiry and our willingness to experiment. Yeah. So what happens if I open my eyes and let in some light? Yeah. What happens if I really notice that kind of invigorating quality of the in-breath and really let my attention rest on that? Yeah. Not to try to banish the sluggishness, but just to notice the system has a way of moving towards its own equilibrium, right? If we push, 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 we will experience some kind of sinking or collapsing, yeah? So to appreciate that we can experiment to bring in a little bit more energy. Noticing that when we're stuck in it, it feels like we're helpless, like there isn't anything I could possibly do to get out of this state right now. I'm just at the mercy of it. I heard a teacher describe it once as like the Wizard of Oz, when the witch kind of cast the spell on Dorothy to just sleep, my pretty, just sleep. And she like falls into a pool of, I can't remember what it is, but just gets very heavy and sleepy. Oh, it's in the Field of Poppies. That's what it is. Yes, thank you. Yeah. So it's just so comfortable and calm and this kind of lure, the pull of these states. So it takes a little bit of interest and experimentation, I think. Not that we have to snap ourselves out of it. Okay, but just to know that this is often the breeding ground for other kind of afflictive low energy states. Yeah. So the poet David White says, sometimes the answer to exhaustion isn't rest. So I've come back to this for years. Sometimes the answer to exhaustion isn't rest, it's wholeheartedness. Yeah, it's wholeheartedness. So we can invite our full energy and engagement kind of back into the present moment when there's a big pull towards withdrawal, towards sinking, towards collapse. What helps bring us forward? Sometimes it's remembering our deepest aspiration for practice, our deepest aspiration for being awake, for being of service, for understanding, for compassion. And so even sometimes just remembering that, no matter what's happening now, that can bring a kind of recalibration of our energies, of our systems. Yeah. So other thing I like to reflect on with sluggishness is slugs. Yeah, so if you've ever noticed slugs, often looks like not much is happening. They're not moving very much. They're very slow. Yeah, they kind of blend in with the dirt often, but extremely sensitive, right? Extremely sensitive, that whole foot on the ground, like sensitive, moving, feeling its way along, gliding, antenna, yeah? Sensing, going out, coming back. So in our states that feel so solid and untractable, there's still this sensitivity, this alive sensitivity that's noticing, that's being affected, that's alive. So to kind of remember that and re-engage with it in that way. I guess one more thing I'll mention that's been helpful is there are all sorts of teachings that are meant to arouse urgency in our practice, and urgency is something that's really balanced with patience. So urgency is the sense that there's no time to lose, yeah, that the life is precious, that our energy will not be here forever, that many of us can feel a strong desire not to waste our potential. So one way we experience this, you know, it's easy to become complacent around the breathing. Yep, okay, there's another breath going in, going out. But there's this wonderful Zen story about a student who's bored and kind of dull and ho-hum. And then the teacher, as they can only in Zen stories, dunks the head of the student underwater and holds it there for a little while, and then comes back up and said, is the breath boring now? Right? Right? So again, like extreme tactics, but we can get the sense of, we can remember at times, like, what if this was it? Yeah. What if this were the last evening? Yeah, what if this were the last time here together, this moment that has never been like this before? Yeah, it arouses some energy. So again, this is not a contemplation for someone who's prone to intense panic, right? That is not the medicine, right? This is a wonderful counterbalance to sluggishness, complacency, dullness, yeah? Okay, so you can see how this kind of sluggishness could be the breeding ground for a lot of different behaviors and other states. So I just want to say a word about procrastination because it affects so many of us. How many feel like they experience procrastination to some degree in some area of your life? Okay. All right. So we all have our own experience of this. When we start to notice that we are delaying, right? When we are delaying a certain activity, it could be meditating, right? It could be something else that we know is good for us, but we just can't quite get ourselves there. For me, I have a lot of technology procrastination. My email, my inbox is I won't even tell you. I won't even tell you. So it is putting off something, delaying something, and there's a lot that goes into that moment of delaying, right? To some degree, it's kind of choosing some sort of familiar, more immediate comfort and kind of postponing or delaying something that we've had a previously averse experience with in the past, right? But with all kind of avoidance strategies, every time we avoid it, it gets a little heavier, right? It gets a little stronger. And so that association is a little bit deeper, right? So we start to build a story. There's a wonderful book by a Zen teacher called Sherry Huber, and I often tell people, just read, if you even just read the titles of her books, that's probably enough. That, I mean, her books are wonderful too, but just the titles. So one of her books is on resistance, this kind of resistance, and it says, I don't want to, I don't feel like it. That's the title of the book. I don't want to, I don't feel like it. Yeah. So instead of kind of like forcing ourselves, right, there can be a way of noticing what it is that we're averse to, noticing the story, how it gets stronger with each time, and just taking one step in that direction, right? So often we've got a huge story about how hard it's going to be, how long it's going to take, what the complexity is going to be like, how we're not up for it. We've got a huge story around it. So that chatter can be there in the background, and without force or generating more aversion, we can just point ourselves in that direction, also remembering our intention, right? So that moment can have a kind of congruence. We remember our resources, we remember our purpose, and our intention. So this is kind of occurred to me. There are so many acronyms and like little antidotes and things we can apply, but basically what we want to do is name it, to recognize it, feel it, sense it, feel the part of us that's heavy, sluggish, doesn't want to do it, would rather stay in this comfort, and just experiment in the same way that I talked about with sluggishness, of doing one thing a little bit different. Yeah, doing one thing a little bit different. And so there's a lot of room. Again, it can feel like a big impenetrable block, but when we start to move a little bit, it can free up a lot of that energy that's been blocked or held or stuck in aversion. Okay, so in those moments, we have lost touch with the current of life in the present moment. It's like we are stuck in kind of a vortex. Yeah. And our system, our energetic system, our attentional system kind of needs an update. Yeah. It's here in the present moment. Our resources are here in the present moment. So the last thing I wanted to mention around this, a little bit about procrastination, but when Norman Fisher was here, probably more than a decade ago, I can't remember when, but he talked about a Mahayana teaching that is called the three forms of laziness. Yeah, and laziness is like in quotes. So I wanted to just mention this as we close, because it weaves in to some of these low energy states, and then I'd love to hear a little bit from you. But he talked about procrastination as one form of laziness, yeah, just like putting off, delaying, and another form of laziness as busyness. And I loved this, because busyness can look very unlazy. It's almost like a moral issue, right? Like it's like we're somehow ethically good if we're busy. Yeah, we're important, we're needed, we're getting things done. We're better, you know, if we're busy, often. But he was identifying it, or the Mahayana tradition was identifying it as a form of inertia, you know, kind of that kind of what's in motion tends to stay in motion, and a form of kind of compulsive doing. And the other way he talked about this, and I've always remembered it and come back to it, he said, busyness is often very enthusiastic energy. So virya can have a quality of enthusiastic energy. So enthusiastic energy around things that are inessential or a little bit beside the point. Yeah? Have you noticed this? Have you felt this? And this can be a form of procrastination also. So I can get very enthusiastic about cleaning my house when there's something else I have to do that I'm avoiding. Yeah. So we can notice this. And there's a lot of nuance to this. So sometimes as I'm easing my way into something I really don't want to do, I'll do something I kind of don't want to do as my way of easing in, yeah, is getting the energy moving. So there's all kinds of ways of playing and experimenting. But we can tell when we're getting very busy and enthusiastic about something that is not quite on point. Yeah, we can feel that, we can notice that. And we'll also notice at the end that our energy perhaps feels drained, spun around, depleted. It does not feel like we've been kind of congruent or aligned with what's most important, what's essential. Yeah. So we might just check that out. And then the third form he said, he identified was discouragement. Right? So procrastination, busyness, and discouragement. And if our energy keeps getting stuck in these loops, it can lead to kind of subtle or really profound levels of discouragement. Yeah, like we've really lost touch with our own vitality and our own resources, our own deep resources. Yeah, and that can be tremendously discouraging. Like, I don't have what it takes to meet these challenges. Right? So this can really feel like a loss of heart, a loss of confidence in our capacity, or kind of an apathy and a giving up. Yeah. Why bother? It's not worth it. Yeah. So that story can get very strong. It's never going to make any difference. A kind of giving up. So this is like doubt and discouragement that kind of breeds in that kind of sluggish form of resistance, that sinking, that withdrawing. So discouragement, courage has heart in it. So we need to kind of remember our heart, remember our capacities, remember our nature. So again, none of these are character flaws. They are not deadly sins. They are patterns of energy. So if we can start to really identify them and get to know them as patterns of energy, not as indications of who we are, what we're capable of, it really opens up a whole arena of ways that we might work with them. So maybe I'll just end with this quote. This is from Pema Chodron. And this is, again, the laziness that's in quotes. Maybe I'll say first, just to end on this. So I often tell this story when I'm talking about energy or effort. So Deepa Ma, wonderful, she's one of the meditation masters many of you are probably familiar with. So she stayed as a householder in India. She died, I think, in the 80s. And she was the teacher of many of our teachers. and was wonderful for many reasons, but many people recognized that her quality of effort was extraordinary in that it was tremendously powerful, directed, intentional, but also many people talked about her as the embodiment of love. So it was a combination of, someone says in the book, of gentleness and power. All right. So there are wonderful stories of her in which, you know, and she was about 5 feet tall. And some of you know Joseph Goldstein. Maybe you can't tell by just seeing him online or in pictures, those who haven't met him in person, but he's well over 6 feet tall, really very tall. And so there's this wonderful picture of her in the book, and they're holding hands. And he's towering over her, but she's got this like grip, and he's clearly like deferring to her experience and wisdom. But there's a story in the book where he asks her right before, I think it was the last meeting before she died. She wasn't ill, but it ended up being their last meeting. And he said, well, how should I practice? What should I do? And she said to him, without flinching, she said, don't be lazy. Don't be lazy. And if any of you know Joseph, he's about the most dedicated, kind of concentrated person, wonderfully devoted, dedicated, and consistent. So I love thinking of that, that kind of injunction, don't be lazy, because coming from her, somehow, it feels quite different. It's don't waste your potential. Yeah, do not waste this. Do not waste your resources. Yeah, so we can do that from deep love and confidence in our own capacities. In our own capacities. So, okay. I think I will end there. I was going to read one more quote, but why don't we just end there and let that settle for now. So we can just take a moment and be quiet together. Just notice, you know, what's resonated. You can check your energy level, check the current. So remembering that nobody knows what is courageous effort for you. Only you know what that looks like. And it takes a tremendous amount of courage to go even a step across the momentum, the tide of our conditioning. But as we cross, as we gain confidence, as we gain stability, the metaphor changes, right? And we're invited to enter a stream. And that is a stream where our efforting is not needed as much anymore. It's a stream of Dhamma, stream going in a helpful direction, And it engages all of us, body, heart, mind, all engaged, congruent, aligned. Deeply appreciate your efforts, your practice tonight. And I know it has been a lot of talking for me the last couple weeks. And next week, I'll have more of a question and dialogue, more of a chance for more of your questions and dialogue and discussion. But just tonight, I'd love from just a couple people, any of your reflections, responses, observations. Does this feel relevant or relatable in your own experience?
It was so interesting to me that you brought up procrastination today, because I had this, you know, I'm kind of late to the game as far as kind of becoming more aware of some of my patterns and tendencies. But, you know, just as a kind of a prayer, I was thinking about, you know, the Chicago River out of Chicago. It has this little hump to get out to a little, I think, towards the Mississippi. There's this, it's got to have this energy that keeps on. And so I was working on a project today, and it was, you know, I have this tendency, and it, you know, it's really kind of rooted in, for me, and just kind of this, you know, from childhood, really, just shame and worthlessness. And so this is just kind of like a distinct little thing that happened today, and I'm kind of working through this. It's a lot of good things are happening, you know, in the last year or so. Coming back to this practice, but it was, you know, I was finishing a project for somebody, you know, it's an IT, and it was something to help make their life easier, but I always have a tendency of not quite finishing it, because I'm looking for this external kind of approval, somebody that's going to say, that's how it felt like. I was waiting for somebody to say, it's good, and it was like, it was just like having this feeling that you have a voice, you know, we have a voice too, to move that energy, to keep that energy going.
That's it.
And that I don't have to listen to those inner critics from, and whatever else from, you know, from long ago. So, yeah, it was a cool thing. So anyway, so when you were talking about that, that really resonated me, and how that, you know, for me, that thing that could keep that river from flowing on is just kind of this past history that I, with the wisdom now that I have, that I can see and keep that going. So yeah. Anyway, thank you.
Thank you so much for sharing that. Yeah, thank you so much. Yeah. Beautiful, beautiful. Yeah, please.
Yeah, hi, I'm Deborah.
Hi, Deborah.
So the idea of busyness as a form of low energy laziness just so resonated. Like, it's anytime, like anything you do is avoiding something else. And like, how in the world is it so common for me personally to have no time to sit? That's ridiculous. And yeah, so yeah, I'm filling up my day with stuff deliberately giving me no time to sit. And I think that's really engenders curiosity about what is going on when that happens. Thank you.
Good, good. I'm glad it's curiosity and not self-recrimination. Yeah, good. Good, good. I'm glad. Okay. Good. And you're not alone. I mean, it's a culture, it's a culture-wide phenomenon, right? We know this. Yeah. Good. Anybody online willing to risk it? Yeah, Emery, so nice to see you.
Hi, so nice to see you too. This talk and your last talk totally resonate for me. I just, like all of it, I feel like I'm constantly exhausted. I'm constantly doing things that, yeah, I mean, I definitely have busyness, but I also just have a lot of important, I mean, I think, I'm pretty sure they're important, you know, raising kids. I'm a school counselor.
You've got roaring laughter over here. I don't know if you can hear that. I'm pretty sure they're important.
Right. Like, it's not nothing and it's not easy. And just trying to find that harmony so I'm not constantly depleted. And when you were talking last week about that pattern of strain, 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 collapse. And I definitely feel like, and it's, I don't know that for me it's strain, but it's just work, like work, 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 collapse, work, 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 collapse. And I'm wondering how that kind of relates to what you're talking about today. With, you know, the laziness and the low energy and the sluggishness, and yeah, trying to get out of that pattern and just have some harmony in life. I it feels completely mysterious to me how to be in alignment energetically and still do the responsibilities that I've taken on in my life. So I'm just wondering if you can talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, yeah, thank you for that. Yeah, have you had experiences before in your life where you've been, where you felt like energetic or at least kind of active and attending to things, but not strained? Have you felt that before?
Not a lot. Like, I had a lot of responsibilities when I was quite young. I would say, like, there was a time right after college, I had my first job. I was living with my now partner. We didn't have a whole lot of responsibilities, and it was very carefree and fun, and the work that I did was really fulfilling. And
yeah, I remember that.
Yeah.
So I think where the practice can be helpful. So the kind of low energy states I was talking about tonight can come like after a strain, after we've been pushing. They can come like, for some of us, it's kind of our first move is to withdraw and collapse. For others, it can come like after we've been kind of pushing forward. So it's really helpful. So last week I mentioned keeping some awareness in the body. And so it's really helpful just to have a sense of the energetic center is in the body. So you have some sense of your own center. Otherwise, our attention, our energy follows our attention. So if we're always attending to what everybody else needs, what they should be doing. Are they doing okay? What about them? Well, 10 years down the road, how's that going to turn out? And well, maybe this is because of how I was parented. I mean, I, not speaking at all from personal experience, but it's you can feel that in that, when our attention gets pulled out, our energy gets pulled out. And so we lose, you know, one of my teachers calls it, we lose our center of gravity. Yeah. And we're actually more effective at helping those around us if we have our center of gravity. So it feels like we won't be effective, we won't be attentive, but it's actually the opposite. It's the opposite. So I can't remember who said it right now, but someone said, I have to have enough solitude in my day so that I don't spend the rest of the day asking everyone if they're okay or not. Yeah. Either asking everyone if they're okay or not, or if I'm okay or not. Yeah. So spend some time, you know, be compassionately fierce and protective about your own time. So you have some time every day where it's just you returning to your energetic center, returning to your intention, not being pulled out into the needs and demands and requirements. You have some place for that attention and energy to restore and regather so you feel more coherent. Yeah. And so to not be judgmental of yourself when you're pulled in too many directions, but to kind of know, oh, okay, I know where I am. I've forgotten, these are all signs. I've lost awareness of my body. I've forgotten what's important. I'm getting way too involved in what's happening in other people's heads. Yeah, these are all signs. Not sign that you've done something wrong, but that you've just lost alignment. So come back when you're alone and be devoted to that. Yeah.
Yeah, that's very helpful. And I'm very good at replenishing my energy with some regularity and in some like Saturday mornings. I take the morning off and I do my thing to replenish and be ready to like face everything again midday Saturday. But I do meditate every morning, but I think you're right. It's just like throughout the day, like where even am I, I have no idea most of the time.
Yeah. So having a couple questions that are, and that's a good one. Like, where am I? You know, so you're asking like, where's my attention? Where's my energy? Yeah, and just inviting it back. Yeah, inviting it back. So, and for all of us, there are places where practice is flowing naturally and freely, and there are places where it feels like it's just we easily get pulled out. Yeah. So both are important to notice. Like, notice those places where it feels pretty natural and fluid, and notice those places where you regularly get caught, and just stay very attentive and curious at those edges. You know. So, yeah, and there's always some confidence that is helpful in that. Yeah, this practice, this is possible. It is possible in a busy human life. It's not perfect. We're not. It's not about being perfect, but it is possible. So. Yeah. Okay. Really nice to see you. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. Thanks, everybody. So as I said, next time we'll have a little bit more time for discussion. We'll close for tonight. So thank you, Dave. And thank you everyone who helped this gathering come about. So there've been a lot of volunteers who've been getting our space ready, working a lot of hours. So really thank you to the tech team and Tamira for greeting. Thank you. So why don't we just close with dedicating the merit just for a moment. So no need to shift your posture, do anything fancy, but you might just incline your mind in whatever way feels right and natural to you, that the benefits of our practice together be shared. May they be of use. May our practice be of benefit to ourselves and all beings. May each of us be well in body and mind. May each of us be free of confusion and fear. May each of us take care of ourselves and each other with ease. And may we continue to move in the direction of greater wisdom, compassion, and freedom in our own unique ways. So appreciate you all very much. Appreciate any reflection on Donna, myself, or for Seattle Insight that you'd like to offer. And I will see you next week, hopefully. Those online like to unmute and say goodnight. We can say goodbye.